This is a HeadGum Original.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Yeah, people do anything in front of a taxi driver. I mean anything. People too cheap to rent a hotel room.
Oh, driver, hurry up, will you?
People want to embarrass you. It's like you're not even there. It's like, you know, like a taxi driver doesn't even exist.
This city here is like an open sewer, you know? It's full of filth and scum.
I think I know what you mean, Travis. But it's not going to be easy.
How do you guys get to be a Secret Service man?
What?
I was just curious because I thought maybe I'd make a good one. Hey, what kind of guns do you guys carry?
38s, 45s, 357 Magnums, something bigger maybe.
Hi, I'd like to volunteer.
Why?
Why?
Because I think that you are the most beautiful woman I've ever seen.
The taxi driver is looking for a target.
Thanks.
Getting ready. Getting organized. Preparing himself for the only moment in his life that will ever mean anything.
How much for everything?
$350 for the Magnum, $250 for the 38, $125 for the 25, $150 for the 380.
That taxi driver's been staring at us.
You talking to me? You talking to me?
I don't know who's weirder, you or me.
You talking to me? Then who the hell else are you talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here.
I don't believe I've ever met anyone quite like you.
Oh, yeah?
You will never see a more chilling performance than this. Taxi driver.
And this is season 7 somehow of New. Can you believe?
Oh my God.
We thought we were just going to watch Star Wars, and here we are.
Here we are.
God. We've seen everything in the world. And this time, we are making our way through the filmography of director, ever heard of him? Martin Scorsese. We don't know.
Here's the thing. I've heard about him, but I know nothing about old Marty.
Well, is it? I looked it up, and it was Scorsese.
I think it's Sessi.
I thought it was Scorsese.
Bruschetta.
We got to get this right if I want to be saying it 100 more times. We've never seen his films. We know
no.
of him. We've seen a couple of them. We did
I've
have to take
one.
Those off the list. Yeah, Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Yeah. Liked it. Was a fan.
It was pretty good. Yeah. It was a nice time.
We also have producer Ali and producer Anya here with us. Thank God, or else
yes.
we'd be totally lost.
Thank you. This season's going to be 10 episodes. So we picked all of the essential movies of Scorsese.
Warmer.
That's it.
Got it. Super that, long
might been, that might have technically been racist, Nicole.
Oopsies. Well, he's had a whole long career, and we can't get to everything.
But today, so yeah, get over that right now. But today we're going to be discussing his mainstream breakthrough film, Taxi Driver. Ever heard of it? Again, very, very famous.
Scorsese has done 27 feature-length films and 17 documentaries. I don't think newcomers should skip any of his movies. They should do every single one.
Thank you, Reddit. So Taxi Driver is available for free on Tubi, which honestly shocked the heck out of me.
Which is very funny.
Or you can pay to watch it on a streamer. Tubi does throw in a commercial here or there. It did break the flow, but it is free.
That's how Marty wants
As
us to
watch
it.
As the director intended.
When it was happening, I was like, this is exactly how not to watch it.
He goes out, he's like, I prefer people watch it on Tubi. With ads.
So obviously we're going to spoil this film. Uh-huh. I think honestly we're the last people to see it. So go watch it.
It was crazy because as I was watching, I was like, oh my God, so many things have referenced this and now
I
get it.
You know what? Like you talking to me.
Oh
by
my God,
the way,
Lauren, I screamed. Like that's
That's been so butchered. Like that's like it's so not a big deal in this.
No.
Like what? Okay, I'm obsessed. We're so excited for our guests today. We have John Gabris, Ben Rogers, and Ryan Stanger here. They're comedians, actors, and writers who you might know from TV shows like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Workaholics, and 101 Places to Party Before You Die, which is a fantastic show that I loved so much. You also might know them from their podcasts, High and Mighty, The Dumbbells, and of course, this podcast, Newcomers. But when they come together to dissect and ruin your favorite action movies, they are the Action Boys. With a
yeah,
Z.
What a great
boom, boom. No regrets on that Z. No
we
regrets.
We couldn't think of a better that trio perfectly. To kick off the season. Oh my God, yeah.
Well, we're kicking off the season.
Yeah.
This is the first episode of the season.
This is the first one.
Holy okay, shit, so this is where we're starting.
You guys are at your blankest slates when it comes to Scorsese.
Scorsese. Yeah. And yeah, we have now watched this film, and that's where we're at.
We as the Action Boys all kind of got together before we did this, and the big question we have for you guys is why?
why are we doing it?
Yeah, well, no, this is the natural progression from Marvel and Batman to Scorsese.
Well, I thought it was hilarious, actually, to do this leap, because it came to me when I was in the car with my husband, Mike, and we were talking about his movies, Martin Scorsese. And I was like, oh, yeah, I haven't seen any of those. He's like, it'd be so funny if you did Newcomers, Martin Scorsese. And I was like, that's just, it's like, so we'd watch like all really good movies. We've never like really had the experience of like
sitting down watching some of the greatest movies our country has produced in the last 40 years.
And isn't that kind of amazing to jump from Marvel and Batman to this? I think it's so great.
I think it's really fun.
He is quoted as like saying Marvel like ruined movies, right? Didn't he say something like that?
That makes the rounds.
Well,
like,
he didn't say they ruined movies. He just called them not movies. He said they're more like rides.
The theme park rides. Yeah.
Which is correct.
That's a cool way to put it.
If you watch Taxi Driver and Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and you go, which one's a movie? Like, I think you're going to be able to answer that question.
And which one's a ride? Yeah. Taxi Driver's a ride.
I mean, he's an 80-year-old man. He's not going to give, like, the fucking Guardians of the Galaxy a glowing review or watch it ever.
Yeah. That movie would kill Joe Biden. If they made Joe Biden watch Guardians of the Galaxy 3, it would fucking
in a 40X chair.
So, Scorsese, is there an element of troll bait to this? Do you guys kind of want to rile people up a little bit?
I don't want that at all.
Okay.
No, I don't want anyone mad at me over Scorsese.
No, okay, I want people to be happy that we're doing something else that we haven't seen that is really important. Everything that we've watched, honestly, is important to the culture in one way or another. So this is another one. And I hope that people, give us grace with our opinions as we discover this for the first time.
I think the internet is a place for grace, so we're going to be fine.
Here was my fear in coming into this, is that people
you have fear.
Yeah, people cannot like Scorsese, and that's totally fine. Like, I don't feel the need to go online and like art. I mean, his movies are celebrated. People go to them. We could walk out right now and find a theater where Taxi Driver's playing somewhere. He doesn't need to be defended. And it's definitely like a film bro thing to go after people that don't like him. And it's like, fine. Like, who gives a shit? Like, the guy's doing
fine.
We could
walk and find a theater with Taxi Driver right now.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. Just walk outside right now.
You got. You can walk and find a theater with Sybil Shepherd and watch a porno right now if you want.
They were obsessed with that in this film.
Yeah, they really like the porno theater.
I think I haven't watched it in quite a while, and it not only holds up, I think it's more relevant now than it ever has been.
It had a lot of stuff that felt really current. Yeah. Like I felt like I knew some improvisers who were like this guy.
I truly watched it and I was like, I know people like this. Also, is this like an incel? Is this where they got it from?
100%.
That's where they got it from.
They watched and they're like, I see myself in that man. That's what I'm going to do.
No joke. There are people who are like, oh shit, yeah, I guess I'm the Travis Bickle of my friend group. And it's like, no, he's not the guy you want to be. Yeah.
That's like when people go, I'm a Carrie, and I'm like, you're a sociopath and narcissist.
How much do you guys know about John Hinckley Jr.?
Who's that?
What?
I mean, that's...
So John Hinckley Jr. shot Ronald Reagan and said he was inspired by this movie.
He did it to impress Jodie Foster.
What?
Reagan lived.
Someone shot a president? Yeah. Hold on.
Ronald Reagan was shot at. He a bullet went inside Ronald Reagan like his first year in office.
And then
luckily
was like,
Nancy was there to bend over and suck the bullet out.
Oh my god, Harris.
She's got fucking incredible. She's like a fucking vacuum cleaner. She's the most famous sucker in Hollywood. Up.
Yeah. Okay.
Luckily Nancy sucked the bullet right out.
The goat.
She saved my life.
Well,
and she gave me a happy ending to boot.
Okay.
She sucked
I'm sure
the
we're
going to
get into all
dick.
Of
well,
okay.
She blew me. She didn't suck the bullet out. She blew me so hard it popped out.
John Hinckley Jr. tried to blow me away, and Nancy blows me every day.
Best orgasm of my life? Nancy popping the bullet out of me.
John Hinckley Jr. specifically referenced the movie Taxi Driver, cut his hair into a fucking mohawk, and was doing this to impress Jodie Foster. Here's what
he know Jodie Foster?
No.
Only from watching Taxi Driver.
He was a stalker. Like he was like Travis Bickle for real. And that's this so was scary. A note. This is a note he wrote to her. Over the past 7 months, I've
and
left
you bought this? Like you have like the original?
He's wearing John Hinckley's hat.
Hey, Lauren, you can buy his art. He makes music. There's fans of him out there.
He lives in Brooklyn now.
That's
he's out
really?
Of jail.
Promote his art. What are we doing?
He's okay, on a Herald team.
Over the past 7 months, I've left you dozens of poems, letters, and love messages in faint hope that you could develop an interest in me. Although we talked on the phone a couple of times, I never had the nerve to simply approach you and introduce myself. The reason I'm going ahead with this attempt now is because I cannot wait any longer to impress you. John Hinckley Jr.
That's sick.
Oh, no. Okay, that's wild. I would never be impressed by someone shooting somebody on my behalf. I'd be like, ugh.
It's good
why
to say that.
Why don't you buy me flowers?
Just get out of this now.
You guys are public figures.
You know what? Fuck it. I'm going to go on record. I don't want anybody shooting anybody on my
don't
behalf.
Don't shoot anyone for me.
Me neither. I'll say it too.
I feel so bad for Jodie Foster because she's endlessly asked about this and it's very clear she doesn't want to fucking talk about it.
She gets so fucking mad.
Why would she ever want to talk about it? Some crazy man shoot someone for her?
12.
Don't ask me about it.
They found out during the Academy Awards in 1980. So Scorsese says he was there for Raging Bull. De Niro won year for Raging. And
spoiler,
and Scorsese was in the bathroom, and all these giant guys. And Scorsese's like 5'2", so like all these huge bodyguards.
Oh,
and he was like,
king.
"Wow, the Academy Awards really like took security seriously this year." And then later he found out they were all FBI agents that were there because
that's
the fucking president
oh my God,
got
that's
shot.
Wild.
And De Niro told him he was like, "Yeah, I guess they shot." He shot Reagan because of the taxi driver. It's crazy.
It'd be funny to go back in time just to help Hinckley aim better. Fucking head the HIV crisis off at the pass with the fucking Hinckley a little higher. Yeah.
Hey, I like it would be great to have unions still.
So,
could you imagine being like
podcast?
Jody? Could you imagine being Jodie Foster and doing like press for NIAID, and you're doing like you know, like she's won a bunch of Academy Awards and shit, and you're doing like a junket and like Screen Fling like ask you about the fucking John Hinckley Jr.
It's terrible.
Yeah, that sucks.
No, it's so depressing. Well, okay, wait, are you guys all deeply familiar with all of these films that we're going to watch?
I've probably seen all his I haven't seen all his documentaries, but I've seen probably all his movies.
I'm missing a couple of his key movies that I still have yet to see.
You know what I wanted to tell Gabrus about last time we were going to record this? Is because I bet you Gabrus hasn't seen it. It's great. Is American Boy, a documentary that Scorsese made right after Taxi Driver.
About his parents?
Starring the guy who plays the gun dealer. You know, the gun scene where he's buying all the guns and he's laying them out. And then at the end, he's like, do you want pills? I got pills. I can give you a Cadillac. I got the pink slip. that guy used to be a road manager for Neil Diamond. And he has all these crazy... He's from Long Island. He's just a great storyteller. And Scorsese, after Taxi Driver, just shot a documentary with him. And it's incredible. You know the scene in Pulp Fiction where he stabs the adrenaline shot into Uma Thurman?
You get ready for the Quentin Tarantino season. You're
well, it's
like
basically
that.
It's from this documentary.
Oh, okay.
And it's awesome.
That's crazy.
I will check that.
Lauren anyway, and I just going,
okay, so we'll do Tarantino next.
Yeah.
catch up to all these points you're making. So let's all give a quick 1 to 2 sentences on our experience watching this movie. Like, if you guys, you already seen it, I'm sure, but what did you feel watching it this time?
I've seen it a bunch. This was the first time when I put it on, I managed to go like, wow, Lauren and Nicole are watching this for the first time. What's it like watching it through their eyes? And then immediately Travis Bickle uses like 4 racial slurs for black people. And I was oh, this is intense to watch through Nicole's eyes. Okay, this is a little different. Like I was like, okay, let's see how they would like that. He's like, blah, blah. And I'm like, whoa. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of racism in this movie.
Yeah.
A lot of racism in the world. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not in the world. It's just in Taxi Driver. It was like a little unsettling, but then I was like, oh yeah, I have to think about the time period. Like, you know, when was this made? This was made in
76.
76.
Yeah. So I guess it was more, I don't know, people did it more and they recorded it and they were okay with showing other people. Yeah. It was just really wild. There were so many moments where I was like, oh no, why?
I know.
But I did like it. I thought it was shot well and I liked the story, even though it made me uncomfortable at times.
Yeah, me too. I thought it was, I mean, I really enjoyed the movie and I was really excited that it was a movie that I could enjoy. and it wasn't 3 hours long. Also, I was like, wow, it's like a normal length.
A normal length.
And I was really surprised by most of it. Like, I didn't know where it was going most of the time. And then his character truly did remind me of people that I've met. And I was kind of like, this is actually unsettling, thinking about this little apartment he's in and his little plans he's having and what his perspective is on this woman. And like his attempt to date Sybil Shepherd, and it's like gross. And then the whole Jodie Foster. I was really afraid that was going to turn into a bad thing with her, which it already was, but I mean with him. And I was glad it didn't, but then I was like, what a confusing ending, which I would love to dissect.
The ending's wild, but also Harvey Keitel has a coke nail, and I love that it was painted red.
I could really see
that he had a coke nail.
I hated his nail. That was one of my least favorite parts of the movie.
Oh, it was such a good detail.
He had such a great look. I mean, because in the script, the pimp is black, and they changed the whole ending so it wouldn't be Travis Bickle killing all black people. It was much more.
What?
He was much more of
the
was
ending
way
was
more,
he was going to kill all black
yes,
people.
Yes, he was.
But we didn't
way
do
more
anything
outwardly
but throw eggs at him in the movie.
Yes, he was the way eggs. More racist even than, more than he is in the movie. And so Harvey Keitel found a pimp to work with for weeks, and they rented a stage. And the two of them would do improvs together where the pimp would be the prostitute and Harvey would pretend to be the pimp. And then they would switch roles. And I would kill to have that footage of them doing scenes together.
Bananas.
As like teaching Harvey Keitel how to be a pimp.
How to sweet
His
talk.
That he had Stanger's hat, that wife, the wife eater shirt. He looked
Stanger's
fucking awesome.
Hat.
He fucking wrote that monologue. He says to her, and he said he wanted to do it like a Barry White interlude.
Oh, it was so gross when he's dancing with her.
Yeah, I didn't
I really
like it.
Felt sick, and I felt so sad because the girl character obviously is so manipulated. Yeah.
But I gotta say, Harvey Keitel was one of my first crushes growing up.
What?
Wow. What? Where did you from?
What?
You should watch the piano then.
Sister Act.
Sister Act.
Oh, shit.
Have you seen the piano?
In Sister Act. No, Unless I've never seen
hog.
Piano.
He does full frontal.
You get to see
frontal.
His tongue.
I can see his hog.
See it.
Supposedly in Eyes Wide Shut, he originally was in the movie Eyes Wide Shut.
He was working on it for months.
Yeah. He left because he didn't like Kubrick and all his takes is what he says. But I also heard that he might have like pulled his dick out during the orgy scenes.
Oh my God. Wait, that
not
movie.
Not me, Harvey.
At the like start of the pandemic, I was like, I'm going to watch all the classic movies. And I put that on and I watched it. And then like, I never watched another movie. my whole plan fell apart. I liked it.
Remove your clothes. Watching it this time, here's what's terrifying. I was struck about how there's elements that you can relate to in this movie. Because I always understood that how abstract, the concept of loneliness and it being a meditation on that. But this time watching it, I was like, oh, this is a juiced up version of like relatable feelings, you know?
Well, that's what's so good about it is that it absolutely. Tricks you into, and also so Catholic about it of like, hey, I want you to really relate to this complete psychopath. And then once he becomes such a full blown psychopath,
he loses
you'll be mad at yourself. Yeah. Like you'll be like, oh shit, but I was there were things I sort of empathized with.
But then then everyone's praising him. So then it's really mm-hmm. complicated.
Well, yeah, then, and that's why the movie is also completely misunderstood of like the ironic ending at the end. Yeah. Most people are like, no, he's a hero.
Yeah, dude, no. Like, I mean, obviously not.
Yeah, I've seen this movie.
Tiff's seen this movie a few times. I was watching it with Tiffany, and after the end of the movie, he's like, well, he technically never does anything to Jodie Foster, right? And I'm like, no. And he goes, so he's a good guy? And I was like, it's a little grayer than that, babe. Like,
wait, I have a question for everyone.
Yes.
Do the women in the chat relate to him at all?
Relate to
like,
him?
Like Ryan, you're saying you found parts of him relatable.
No, I don't think I related, but I was able to go, well, he can't sleep. He's got, and then I was kind of like, okay, maybe he has a mental illness or maybe he's just an insomniac, but then the lack of sleep is taking him to this other place. But no, I saw him as a pathological liar and manipulative asshole, and I wanted nothing to do with him, but
that's
I liked
why I was able
watching.
To relate.
Yeah, I found him to be super entitled. Like the fact that he just stared at a woman was like, I'm going to take her out. Takes
it's everyone's
her out,
worst
it goes
fear,
well,
isn't it?
And
yes.
then
scary?
Takes her to a fucking porn and then is mad and goes, I don't know about movies. And suddenly it's not his fault that he brought her to a porn and then is like stalking her. I was like, I get how he got there, but it is very wild that that happened.
That moment when she goes, I have the record already is so
it's
fucking
so funny.
Awesome.
It's so good. The movie, there's a lot of funny moments in the movie because Scorsese is just they're attracted to comedy, but like it's so, there's so many dark, funny moments. Like that is so, where she's like, I already got it.
And even, I love that because she was being nice to him, which we all do. And then she's like, I already have this piece of shit, you idiot.
Stuff with Albert Brooks, she and Albert Brooks are in a whole different movie, which is so fucking such a great juxtaposition between like where they're in a romantic comedy and then then there's this fucking psycho just shows up. And I would actually love to see the flip side of this movie where it's just like, or like an episode of some like dramedy or something where one episode, like a fucking Travis Bickle, like tries to ask out the main character. And it's like, this guy's fucking nuts. Yeah. He put his Uber out front and it's just been staring at us for an hour.
Staring.
You're going to go on a date
there
with
are
him?
People who watch this movie and go, Albert Brooks, stop cock blocking my man, Travis Bickle. Like that's his, so problematic.
Albert Brooks is so funny. That scene where he's like just talking on the phone and it's just like, let's not fight. How about the people? We don't pay for the buttons.
Yeah.
We are the people is different than we are the people. How about we don't pay for the buttons?
He's so important in that movie. And like famously, Paul Schrader approached him, the writer of the film, afterwards and said, thank you. Because he improvised a lot. And he's like, thank you. I didn't ever know who that character was. And then you brought it to life. But I like it because he's showing like a healthy way to love somebody, clearly loves Betsy, Sybil Shepherd. She's not into him, but he's able to have a working relationship and even kind of show some chivalry, but not expect anything out of it. So it's great to have that. It's like, oh, this is a healthy way to pine after somebody you work with, but then understand that it's not appropriate if she's not into you. But I just wanted to screw down on my connecting or empathizing.
No. We're leaving it how it was.
I think empathy is a good word. Like relating maybe is the wrong word, but empathize I think is the correct word.
Relating in the sense that like you could be like, I opened up Facebook today and I noticed friends I don't care about posted about an interaction they had. This fucking scum didn't invite me, even though I wouldn't have showed up if they had invited me, but it bothers me. They're out there having fun. One day the world will wash away this filthy scum that didn't invite me to an event that I don't care about. And never.
I'll tell you what, so I've been in Vegas for 3 days. Walk the fucking casino floor. You'll relate to Travis Bickle in a fucking heartbeat.
Well, I do think everybody lies to themselves in similar ways that he does, where it's like, more pills, no more junk food. Like I got
and then
he's just popping pills and fucking eating sugary cereal.
Yeah. I've literally been in that apartment. I don't know why. I've been in there.
Same. In New York, I've gone home with gentlemen who live just like that. Also, he kept drinking Coke while he was trying to go to sleep. And I was like, that's full sugar. And that's caffeine.
Hey, buddy, it's not going to work.
What's his name? It's not Pickles.
No, yeah. Travis Bickles. He's from Rugrats. It's the Rugrats extended universe.
Bickle?
Tommy Pickles' dad.
Travis Bickles.
He's got a dumb name.
You talking to me, Angelica?
We have a new segment.
Oh,
our new segment is Spotted. We're going to see if today's movie has any of the following celebrity sightings. One of Marty's boys, recurring actors that he works with all the time. Robert De Niro, Harvey Keitel, Joe Pesci, Leonardo DiCaprio. Ooh, Marty's mom, Catherine Scorsese, and Marty himself. I wouldn't know what Marty looked like.
He was in it.
He's in it twice. Yeah.
Obviously, Robert De Niro's in the film. Harvey Keitel is in the film. His mom, was his mom in the movie?
She got cut.
Oh, okay.
He cut his own mom out? Wow.
He's in it for 1 second at the end. She's, when there was, you see like all the newspaper clippings.
Uh-huh.
She's supposed to be the mom.
Both his parents are in the newspaper.
But so she wasn't one of the sex workers in the brothel and she was cut out of it.
She was the original choice for
mom,
sport.
His mom is incredible.
Oh,
she's
wait till you guys see Goodfellas.
When you guys see Goodfellas,
is her best performance.
She's in Goodfellas. Yeah. He did a documentary about his parents called Italian American, and they are like, she is just the most charismatic, funny person. She steals scenes from Joe Pesci and Robert De Niro. I mean, she's incredible.
And she's an amazing painter as well.
Wow. Okay, you guys are in love with her.
Yeah, you guys fucking love Catherine Scorsese.
Oh, God, I wish I could have had her make me a big bowl of pasta. God, I would have fucking loved that.
I actually asked her out one time and took her to a porno. It did not go well.
She had seen it already.
It's too performative, Ryan.
Nicole, there's a part where there's a guy watching his wife have an affair in the window.
Yes.
That's Martin Scorsese in that.
Yeah.
Oh!
Also, classic. When they first show Betsy, she walks by him when she's in the white dress.
So that was supposed to be his cameo. And then the actor that he had for that scene in the cab dropped out. And he just stepped in and did it. And he said De Niro really helped him. Because he didn't feel confident as an actor, and he you know when he tells him to keep the meter running, De Niro wouldn't do it, and then they stopped the scene. He's like, "Well, you got to make me."
Oh,
and then doing some Stella Adler shit on
Denzel. Yeah, and then and that's why he's like, keep the fucking meter running. And he's like really getting, and he's like, it did work. He got a performance out of me.
I did the scene. I didn't want to do the scene. I got a bunch of offers after that, so I appeared in some other films after that, but I didn't want to do the scene. I had to sit on a phone booth to do it.
I'm so small. And he just looks ahead.
Then I'm not turning around. I'm trying to do the scene. I'm nervous about the filming. We're over budget.
This will happen even more when you guys do your Quentin Tarantino series. But this is an instance where a director puts himself in the film and says the N-word on camera in a movie he's directing and act. It makes sense for the character in this movie to be racist, especially about the situation. But it's funny to, all right, well, he's not here today. I'll play that guy. It's like, okay.
Well, there is a thing about the like, the guy is such a loser that, like, in classic loser fashion, he wants to try to find someone below him, which makes him racist.
Right.
Which is, I think they're touching on also with Scorsese's character. It's like, no, like, this, it can't be my fault that all this shit's happening to me. There must be some other out there that is doing this to me.
Even but Travis Bickle doesn't give him like the I'm also a racist interact. Like, he's just like ignores him too. He's like, you're pushing it too much for me, buddy.
He's like, yeah, this is too racist even for me. But if it was a white guy that his wife was cheating with, I don't think he would have even said the ethnicity, which is a very curious thing to
Yeah, yeah.
This white motherfucker's up there fucking my wife. Yeah, he wouldn't say that.
Yeah, I don't think he would say that. Done hit is
Steven Seagal.
Fucking honky up there.
Wait, so does Martin Scorsese, is he in all of his own movies? And does he say the N-word in all of them?
Not on camera. No.
Just in Video Village, just whispering it to himself right before action.
It's an actor's secret. No, he's in a lot of his movies in small little parts. Not in like giving himself meaty acting role parts, but like, you know, he's like a guy wielding a spotlight in After Hours and shit. Like, he has like small little fun roles.
He reads a great thing at the end of Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh.
That's one of the few times the cameo lifts the movie overall. Like, the meta idea of him doing the talk at the end of Flowers is like bananas. It's so good.
We'll get to that in 10 weeks.
Are you guys doing Flowers?
Are you going to do it? He shows an actual cameo that he did for somebody. Hey, it's Marty here. We just wanted to wish you a happy birthday. It says here that you're into throwing pottery. That's
He's so into cameos that he just joined Cameo. He's like, I'll just do that.
It's him and Stanley from The Office are the highest rated guys on there.
Yeah, that guy makes so much money. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with more about Taxi Driver after this.
Remember in 2018 when Border Control separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents and deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, 6 years later, there are hundreds of families who still have not been reunified. Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm-reduction-based practice. Since 2018, they've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family to find legal representation, housing, and counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you'd see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like me and believe that families belong together, join me in supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity to donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at alotrolado.org/volunteer. altrolado.org/volunteer.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. My social battery right now, where would I put it? Ooh, I mean, I'm kind of looking to connect with friends. I'm also looking to retreat a little bit and be by myself.
It's hard to know exactly what you need at any given time. And it can be so easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves too thin, especially with social gatherings picking up so much. After the winter, the spring is here. Well, what's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I started therapy when I was about 30, and it was so, so helpful for me for learning about myself, learning about boundaries, learning about my relationships with other people, and how to deal with other people. There's so many things you can benefit from therapy. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. So just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/newcomers today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/newcomers. Okay, we're back. Taxi Driver was released February 9th, 1976. A little winter movie for Valentine's Day. It was written by Paul Schrader, a frequent Scorsese collaborator, and the director of a whole bunch of movies like 1978's Blue Collar starring Richard Pryor, 1980's American Gigolo starring Richard Gere, and 2017's First Reformed starring Ethan Hawke, who's like my favorite.
Should have stuck with the winter movie.
I've seen none of them.
Me neither.
If you like so drunk men writing in journals, you should watch all the Paul Schrader movies.
you guys should check out some of them.
American Gigolo.
Yeah.
Yeah, American Gigolo is very good. And the music
stylistically and the music and
super sexy.
Richard Gere is the lead and he's at peak sexy gear.
Okay. All right.
There's also
he's in sixth sexy gear.
There's also Paul Schrader is a true psycho.
Yeah.
And he's dealing with all kinds of weird repressed sexual stuff. He was a Calvinist, a Dutch Calvinist. And so he's constantly, you know, reconciling with his own religion, his loss of faith, his sexuality. He lived his whole life afraid he was going to go to hell. And there's tons of stories about him like playing Russian roulette and try like in a jacuzzi and trying to get other people to get involved with it.
Whoa.
He outdoes you guys as newcomers. He didn't see a movie until he was 21 years old.
Any movies, yeah.
Wait, really?
Yeah,
because of his like parents' strict religion.
Yeah,
you know, this was the first time I saw Taxi Driver since I moved to Los Angeles, and Schrader wrote it in Los Angeles. So he was just driving around like sad and depressed, staying up all night. And that's what made him feel like a taxi driver. And it's the most L.A. I felt a lot more of Los Angeles in this movie than I had realized before.
It does have a bit of that. I always think Times Square is like the scariest place on earth back then. It's like
you're
everything
not wrong.
Bad is happening. And now it's like an M&M store and it's like there's no cars allowed. Yeah.
Well, we talk about this a lot on Action Boys, but man, 70s New York looks fucking good on camera. And
it
like,
looks the best. Yeah. I love that and I love seeing that. But it also just looks like it would be like the worst place to live, actually.
Going off Stanger saying relatable moments, did you guys relate to when the cabbies are all sitting around? I felt like that was like an Action Boys recording.
when the guy's just making, when Wizard is making up a story about like having sex.
Yeah.
It's like just laughably ridiculous.
On this viewing,
gave me $100 tip.
On this viewing, I like Wizard more. I didn't really like pay attention. Peter Boyle's character Wizard sings in this movie and I was so stoked to like dive in. Like I never really paid attention
to a lot
to those
of that
cronies.
Is him. Like Scorsese is great with improv. He lets actors do a lot. I mean, obviously the You Talking to Me thing was improvised. Everybody talks about that. But the all of Peter Boyle's stuff was him kind of riffing in Scorsese's hotel room. He was like, hey, I have some ideas about the character. Can I walk you through them? And he just kind of made up that monologue, and then they put that in the movie.
Wow. Yeah. That's cool.
It's so important because it's the only real time that that Bickle is vulnerable at all and kind of asking for help. And the poor Wizard tries to help him. But like,
hey, I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah. And like Bickle is just so incapable of any kind of like human reaction. I mean, he's even somebody that's trying to help him. He can't even fucking take it. It just, you know,
I don't know.
He's like, man, I'm just getting so sick of it. I just want to fucking kill everybody. And Wizard's like, well, you know, got to talk to somebody, maybe drink some water.
Okay, we're going to jump into the plot a bit. We can obviously keep adding our thoughts. But just to get, so, because we have many listeners who are not going to watch this film and they're only going to learn about it through us. Okay,
oh,
this
that's is a really, nightmare. That's amazing. This is,
I just have to assume that's true, right, Nicole?
Yeah, a lot of people don't watch the movies and just listen to our beautiful thoughts.
So, okay. So in New York City, Travis Bickle, Robert De Niro, gets a job driving cabs on the graveyard shift to cope with his chronic insomnia and loneliness. He also frequents adult movie theaters, but he doesn't seem to jerk off in them, which I appreciate.
He sure doesn't.
And he keeps a diary chronicling how he's feeling and trying to feel better. Driving around the city, he witnesses crime and urban decay, which generally disgusts him. Someday a real rain will come and wash all this scum off the streets, he writes in his journal.
And I just like... got annoyed. I was like, why do you care so much about the scumminess of New York? Drive your cab and have a nice time.
I think the porn theater too is like, that's all that's open. So that's all he like,
that's what I thought. I thought the porn thing was only because it was like that time of day.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Night. But he then takes that girl on a date there. And I'm like, yes. So you goes simply there don't know about what a theater is? Like,
that's when he realized how fucking totally insane he is. When he's
yeah,
like,
and
what?
He's like,
this
really
is a movie.
Stupid. He's like, this is where we see movies.
This
I don't know
movie,
another
moving
movie.
Pictures. How was you I supposed
like
to know?
One?
I do
this
know Schrader
one,
was
plot.
Like, Schrader made a point of like, he does not know anything. He is like he doesn't know any actors. He doesn't know when she brings up Kris Kristofferson. She's like, I don't know who that is. Like he's clueless about all because he's like not plugged into society whatsoever. Because he's yeah, like, just
and that's
this
such a funny
weirdo.
Angle for someone yeah. to hate everything about society, but also just be no, absolutely nothing. No, yeah. Know nothing about it.
Take
it's
in
so
nothing.
Indicative of like yes. his hollow rottedness. He's like
he's
I
the
hate
internet.
Everything about that. Yeah, exactly.
I also think he wants it too. Like he's and again that's where like the Calvinism can kind of find its way in. It's like there's this pious like. I'm above all this scum and disgust in the streets. But also, he, you know, he's watching people fuck on screen. Like, he wants to be yeah. around it.
He just
he
goes and
it.
Fucking
he's
in the back
nasty.
Of his cab.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he's like, I got to clean the jizz every night.
Yeah.
That was wild. And the yeah. blood sometimes. I was like, what are
sometimes
you letting people do in the back of your
I
cab?
Know.
Dude.
Hey, we
I
all
couldn't relate to him not jerking off in the theater. Get your hog out!
Rest in peace.
I picked
okay.
up Pee-wee Herman.
So, okay. Next, we meet Betsy, Sybil Shepherd, a campaign volunteer for Senator and presidential candidate Charles... What it was Palantine? Which was...
Yeah.
That's a
like
weird name
emperor.
To me. Yes, okay. It
no,
was from
that's
Star
why.
Wars.
Palpatine is the emperor's
oh, Palpatine.
Name.
Oh,
yeah.
Palpatine. Okay, Travis fixates on her, watching her through his cab window. Then he goes into her office to ask her out for coffee at the diner. Betsy confesses that she feels a special connection to Travis. But on their next date, Travis takes Betsy to a porn theater. She is repulsed and leaves. And though Travis tries to reconcile with her, it don't work. This sets Travis off. And he storms into Betsy's office, berates her, and gets kicked out. That was so scary.
That was so scary. And I also hated how he manipulated her at the coffee to be like, nobody understands you. You're sad.
Yes.
And I can tell you're sad. And I'm like,
yes.
I actually don't think she is, bitch.
She's fine.
Like, she seems fine.
I would like to just interject that Sybil Shepherd is absolutely fucking stunning in this role.
She's so,
so
beautiful.
She's got fucking height. She's a rebounder. She's strong on the inside.
I don't know what you're talking about.
She's got height. She's a rebounder.
She's good in the
she's
paint.
She's big. Yeah. But
she's
so
like
pretty.
A six man that could get her return or like her jersey retired, you know.
That's what I said when I watched it.
De Niro is so handsome. That
oh, he's so hot.
It's so perfect for yeah. the movie because it does make sense that Sybil would go like, okay, yeah, I'll
well,
have
that's,
coffee with
that's
this guy.
He's like a tough
the, that's
guy.
Part of the issue with mm-hmm. the movie is that he's so cool and good looking that then people misinterpret the movie.
Right.
Yeah,
because
well, yeah.
you're like, he's got to be the good
cool.
guy.
Yeah.
He puts that mohawk on, though. You're like, okay, this guy's a bad dude. He looks
well, Scorsese says that they no one knew what the movie was going to be. I mean, can you imagine showing those porn scenes to studio executives before they were able to oil out the like actual nudity? And they're like, this is the fucking movie you're bringing us? So like everybody doesn't know if this thing's even going to get released. But he says that De Niro was the only one who was like, oh, this is going to be a big thing. And he was like, especially when he had the mohawk on. So De Niro was able to see himself and be like, oh yeah, this is an iconic look that people are going to be talking about forever.
So, it's a good Halloween costume.
I also hated how he...
I was him for Halloween one year.
Yep.
That makes so much sense.
You were?
Yeah. You probably saw me. I was at a UCB party.
It was at a UCB party. Yeah. Yeah, I remember.
I probably did see you.
Probably was like,
this is funny. A little mohawk.
I guess he wants to be in the army. Is he a punk rocker?
He's an army rocker. Man. Good costume, army man. Bye.
Hey, can I tell you, people on the subway thought it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah,
rave reviews.
I dressed as Palantine for like a whole month. Nobody noticed.
I thought it was so funny when Palantine's like to try to get in with Travis. He's like, I learn a lot more from limo rides than or from taxi drive rides than I do from limo rides.
Like, that was ridiculous. I was like, what is happening? And then they shook hands and I was like, what? Are we friends now?
I love that moment when Palantine's like, yeah, I love talking to my constituents. And he's like, I'm just sick. I'm sick of this fucking city. You see Palantine being like, oh, God. Kind of like,
oh, boy.
It's like meeting a podcast fan. Huge fan of Action Boys. Oh, cool. It's like, yeah, you ever want to just take a submachine gun to your workplace? You're like, oh, all right, man. Well, see you around. Thanks for your $8 a month. I'll see you later.
In modern therapy speak, in this diner that we're talking about, does he love bomb her? He kind of love bombs her, right?
Gaslights
bombs? Yeah. I mean, it is. It's like he's convincing her that he can see her and like is totally
Yeah, like
into
saying
it.
That she's special and only he can see it and that other guy doesn't get it. It's a
move that, as I understand it, a lot of directors use on actors to try to get in with get either a performance or then end up being in a relationship with an actor that they have.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's how I ended up sucking off John Mackey.
Peter Bogdanovich.
After a Funny or Die video.
He's like, I can tell you're sad. You're like, I am. I just got $75.
And a bag of Doritos.
They paid me in pizza. I am sad.
In speaking to, why he takes her to this like porno movie, like trying to understand that, Paul Schrader will say, like, it's because he's stuck in this perpetual cycle of loneliness and he wants to blow it up. Like, he wants, knows he doesn't, he wants to either take her down or he wants her to go away, you know, like, because he can't handle the intimacy or being, and I think it fucking surprises him. Like, he picks somebody unobtainable and then she's like, fuck, I'll go out with you. And he's like, what? And he's like, and he takes her to the porn.
How do I blow this up? Yeah.
And it's also they were saying earlier, it's the only theater he knows. It's the only thing open. He doesn't know shit. So it exists on like all these different kind of weird levels. It's cool.
Yeah.
My record player's broken. I don't know.
I don't really do music.
He wanted to go listen to it at her place. I'm like, you better go to her place.
That is such a funny. That's such a funny idea to give a girl on a first date a record and go, we should go to your place and listen to this.
Yeah. A record that fucking... she told you about.
Yeah, right. That's from like 5 years ago. Silver Tongue Devil came out in like 70, 71 or something.
Wait, did she mention it to him first?
Yes.
Or no?
She was like, you remind me of Chris Christopherson or this Chris.
Oh, and
Chris
then that's the record.
Line.
Oh.
Yeah. Have you ever heard the record?
It's The Pilgrim, chapter 33.
That is such a perfect bad gift, though. It's like, I was listening. It's like, but if you were listening, you would know that I've heard that a million times because I probably own it.
I don't know. I don't. My record player is broke. Here you go. Hey, enjoy. Yeah, okay,
hey, I got you a picture of your parents.
Ever seen this?
Remember that blender you have that you were telling me about that you liked? Here you go. I got you one.
I bought you one.
So watching the city through his cab window every night, Travis confides in a fellow taxi driver named Wizard Peter Boyle, and it's the dad on Everybody Loves Raymond. I was trying to figure out what show he was on, about his violent thoughts. So in an attempt to find an outlet for his anger, Travis begins a program of intense physical training. I think he does like 5 sit-ups. I don't know.
Yeah,
then
he does 5 sit-ups,
some
2 pull-ups.
Clapping push-ups.
Doesn't have a lot of body fat, I'll tell
you. Strong looking.
Yeah.
But he buys 4 handguns from a black market gun dealer named Easy Andy, played by Stephen Prince. And at home, Travis practices drawing the weapons in his mirror. I hate it. This was very scary to me. And modifies
like
one to allow him to hide and quickly deploy it from his sleeve. He begins attending Palantine's rallies to scope. Deploy.
What the hell's going on here?
Wikipedia. Yeah. To scope out his security. One night, Travis shoots and kills a man attempting to rob a convenience store. That was also one of the most racist and terrible parts.
That was the most fucked up parts
wild.
Of the movie. Yeah.
That's...
I'm like, you really saved the day here. I think it was actually nothing was going to happen probably.
Yeah.
And that guy would have run away with like $20.
And then the owner was like, I'll figure it out. And I was like, what? Why do you want to take this on?
That's the most fucked up part when he's like, it's all good. Go, I'll take care of it. Like, this happens would, all the like, fucking time.
And then
time.
Beats the shit out of him. I was like, he's already been shot.
That made me sick. And it was so like, is this what the 70s in New York, like where it's like, there it's lawless and like you can just leave and this guy's going to just dispose of this person somehow. And it's,
I think it's also building on the loneliness factor. Like, so he starts acting out so people will notice him and then he fucking kills somebody. And the guy's like, this never happened. And he's just like, what? Okay. And then he just keeps going out in his cab more. And he
he learned no consequences whatsoever for what he did there either. So now he feels even more greenlit into doing whatever fucked up shit he wants to do.
It's impossible to watch. I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think of when he's on the phone and he's trying to get her back and the camera moves away? Because this is a famous thing that people talk about when the camera leaves him on the phone booth and then shows the empty hallway.
I felt like he wasn't even talking to her. I mean, honestly, it was like so... To me, that was such a weird, like, she's going to answer and talk to him and do all this.
I didn't think he was talking to her. I thought he was like leaving a message, but to him, leaving a message felt like he was speaking to her.
I think this is like before the leave a message era. So like he's calling her at work and like she's just picking up the phone and like you can't shake this guy. I mean, this is before you could screen your calls. I bet you he got so insane that she had to start going to a different desk. Like, I bet you got to that level, and this is the first. And I think Scorsese says, like, it was just so painful to watch that the camera can't even watch it.
Oh, wow. Oh, interesting.
Which is, it's also the cool thing about Scorsese is that he, and I don't know if any other director can really do this, he is able to make you think like the camera. So you start to see from Travis's point of view throughout the movie, which kind of freaks you out of like, God, why is he fucking looking at this guy like this? And then he starts to almost give the camera a personality, how it looks at objects and stuff in a way that nobody ever really does. I was struck how many lines are done without the actor in the frame.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where he's like, people are talking and he's looking at a fucking plop, plop, fizz, fizz, like fucking Alka-Seltzer thing.
Refreshing to me, you know, having watched now 4,000 hours of everything from Star Wars to Marvel, that like, it was like, oh, there's like just interesting choices being made.
Right, some direction.
Or being artistic.
Interesting. Really I agreed. And like the DP on this, the film, the director of photography was saying his whole crew had a hard time because he would be like, you know, Scorsese would be like, and then just move out and leave the frame, have the actor leave the frame. And they'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, and he was like trying to tell a story there. And I even took it, this isn't what he says about it, but I took it as like this whole movie, instead of being in his point of view, you're almost witnessing it all happening. And then it makes you complicit. So it's like, okay, I have to co-sign everything that's happening here. And to me, this is like right when he's really snapping and he's going to really start stalking her and acting out. And this is like your opportunity as his accomplice to leave. It's an empty hallway. Mm-hmm. And then you don't. You fucking stay like, there with
hold
him.
Hold on, I'll stay with him.
Yeah. I love that.
He cares about Jodie Foster. Dude, the moment when he goes back to Jodie Foster, he's like, remember I was in the cab? Like, that's...
And she doesn't remember, which I was like, yeah.
Of course
also, her life is a horror remember. Every day. Yeah. She's traumatized
She's
repeatedly.
Incredible in this movie.
She's such an amazing actor. She's one of my favorite actors of all time. She's... so amazing. I love her and everything. And this blew my mind, honestly, because I'm like, how do you even know how to do
this?
How
do you know how to be a
12-year-old
sex worker?
She worked with Scorsese on Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, which came out before this. And she's also incredible in that.
So good.
As a kind of girl from the wrong side of the tracks, bad influence. And she's like it's so magnetic. You're like, wow, she's incredible.
Like, her cigarette work is bananas for, like, a 12-year-old.
Even, like, the outfits and everything, I was just, like, so impressed by her. But
outfits were intense because they were, like, slutty and childish at the same time.
Yeah,
in a way that is just, like
that. But
that's, like, oh, this is
perfect.
A dangerous, disgusting combo. But just to jump back to him saying, like, don't you remember me? How many interactions have you guys had like that with like a Paris where someone comes up and is like, mm-hmm. dude, hey, what's up? Remember 6 years ago, I was the guy who tweeted that I was visiting Long Island and you liked it? And I'm like, oh, well, nice to meet you, man. Well, pleasure. See you around. Jesus fucking Christ, people. And I felt so real. Like, he just showed up. He was like, I was at your live show when you did Munch Madness. And, well, you know,
and,
like,
she's only interacting with creeps.
Yes, yeah. Her whole life,
so
is
it's like
weird,
she's kind of like
men.
They all kind of blend together at a certain point.
And yellow cabs, there's a million of those. New
neighbors
City.
Is like Palantine. Thank you very much. Yeah, Long well, Island guy 21.
So I can count on your $5 next month.
So this is when he starts to notice Iris, who's Jodie Foster, 12-year-old sex worker on his night shifts. He poses as a client in order to get her alone and tries to convince her to leave her pimp, Sport, Harvey Keitel. Later, Travis cuts his hair into a mohawk, attends a rally where his plans to assassinate Palantine are thwarted by Secret Service agents who see him unzipping his jacket and putting his hand inside. He escapes and makes it back home. Okay, the part where he's talking to the Secret Service guy, he's like, I think I could be a Secret Service.
It's so weird.
So and the guy is, of course,
huge.
Clocking him
yeah.
and going like, he's a threat. Something's happening here. But he's like, oh, really? What's that like? That you want to?
He's like, why don't you write down your name
your
and
address?
Yeah.
Your fingerprint.
His street is like Henry Crinkle, K-R-I.
And you forgot some digits here.
Yeah, he's like, oh, sorry, I got that number. Confused with my phone number. My zip code and phone number.
But was he
confused.
Trying to be the weirdest person? Like, what was he trying to do?
He was like casing the security, so when he assassinates Palantine, like, he'll be able to know who's coming
out.
He
was trying to say, like, oh, there was somebody over here that was shady or whatever, and then and so it would be like throwing him off the scent of
but
him.
But he got in
something.
His own way because he's such a fucking freak goofball.
The shorter guy, so the two secret security guys, there's the really tall guy and the shorter guy. The shorter guy was a Vietnam vet and was the one that told the Scorsese and De Niro that guys on missions in Vietnam would shave their head into the mohawk. So that's where they got the idea from that guy.
Especially when something real bad was going to go down, and so you wouldn't even fucking talk to him. Here's something to think. So as you guys are doing these movies, I would say with Scorsese especially, everything is in there for some kind of reason, and sometimes he doesn't even fully know like what it is. Like, I saw this in a film by Godard, and I don't know why it made me feel this way, but it made me feel a way. But like, so everything, like every shot in there, like there's something behind it, and so you can always ask yourself, especially if it's weird, like why is he showing me this? Like, what is and it's worth kind of screwing down on, and it can make it more fun for yourself. Because even if you're watching something that that is a miss for you, there's usually some kind of reason. It's, you know, a shot that's in there for some reason, or, you know, something that like feels a little like against the grain, and that can make his stuff kind of fun.
Living in Scorsese's themes is so much more appealing than living in various people's interpretations of Batman. So like, it's like, it's going to be so rich for you guys to find these commonalities
amongst
the movies.
And yet we still found stuff to like in the
I know. Yeah,
of course.
I like about 60% of the Batman movies. Yeah. I could safely say that. But I like 99% of the Scorsese movies. Finding all these commonalities, stuff like Catholicism and like all these like patterns he always has. I'm curious, as you guys pick up on stuff, like, you know, I'm curious. I'm excited to listen to episode 10 and find out what you guys have picked up on and are seeing now in Killers of the Flower Moon. Because the dude has been like, you know,
50
making
years.
Bangers for like a half a century. He's been
it is
like
crazy that
relevant.
He was good straight from the jump. Like, you watch his short films and it's like, oh yeah, the guy's amazing.
He's so giving you guys more information on him. Like, he's a true virtuoso and like cinema fucking freak. It's all, and he has like this cinema fluency. It's all accessible to him. So as a kid, he's like an
Paisan.
He's an asthmatic kid. So all he does is go to movies, and he becomes obsessed at a young age and just goes to movie after movie after movie. And not only that, he can like access, you know, specific shots and reference, you know, foreign films, American films, and he kind of loves it all. And then he studies it. And then from the very beginning, he's just really fucking good at it. And he's found this weird way, not even a weird way, but he's managed to make very personal films throughout his entire career. And if you look, like, even when he is like, oh, I'm going to sell out
he does a legacy sequel to The Hustler and makes The Color of Money. And it's just like, or his big, like his big supernatural movie is Shutter Island. It's like he never, he's able to do this shit, you know.
He can't make a, not make a personal movie despite himself. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Fun fact, like him, him and De Niro like accidentally grew up, like unbeknownst to them, they grew up like up like a block and a half away from each other in the same neighborhood in New York. Yeah.
Wait, who did?
De Niro and Scorsese.
Yeah, they knew they were at like they were at like neighborhood dances together and stuff.
Yeah.
Oh my God, meant to be.
Kind of knew from the neighborhood now.
And Scorsese's loyal to his like groups of guys, his actors. So you'll see a lot of repeats, and I'm like get pumped for like, you know, a lot of Leo Dio, a lot of De Niro, a lot of these like a lot of fucking greats.
Yeah,
and crew, like starting from Raging Bull, he works with the same editor for every single movie.
Yeah, Thelma Schoonmaker. Huh. She's some people. She's a legend film editor, but everyone's always kind of surprised, especially back in the day, that Marty's editor is a woman. And one time, she was asked in an interview, "Thelma, how do you handle editing all these violent movies of Marty's?" And she goes, "They're not violent till I edit them." And it was just like the fucking coolest fucking response.
Jesus. That is cool.
Yeah. And like you guys as actors would like to work with him because he fucking loves actors. He loves people that can improvise and add and like
and that are funny.
Yeah.
Well, that's our goal with this.
We want to get into Marty's next movie.
You just get him as a guest on the podcast. And
we've tried to be in every franchise we've talked about.
Yeah, and it honestly, we're like worked out for us.
I'm open to all Tyler Perry films as well as Star Wars.
The angle may be through his youngest daughter. Do you know Francesca Scorsese?
Well, we've seen. I mean, I've seen her.
I've
like,
seen her TikToks.
Yeah.
And he'll do her TikToks.
That's cool.
Yeah,
like, that's his daughter.
Let's get her on.
Maybe we could be in his daughter's TikTok.
We tried.
I hope I book one of his daughter's TikToks.
Well, let's finish this plot so that the people who are listening who are like, what happened next can hear what happened.
Yeah,
okay.
So that evening, Travis goes to see Iris again, planning to shoot Sport. He enters the building and engages in a shootout with Sport and one of Iris's clients right in front of her while she begs Travis to stop. This was wild.
Travis is
shot several times, but manages to kill the two men and the bouncer outside. Travis tries to commit suicide. This shocked me, but is out of bullets. Oh, severely injured, he slumps on the couch next to sobbing Iris. As police respond to the scene, a delirious Travis imitates shooting himself in the head using his finger, which is covered in blood.
That was scary.
All of it was wild.
Now, when he was trying to shoot himself, I thought he shot to like test if there were bullets, like not at himself, and I'm like, you're wasting the one if you do want that one. Like, is it? Did that happen, or am I mixing it? Or did he do it at his head first?
I think he did it at his head first, and then to the guy.
That's so intense.
You're just gonna ruin this girl's life. Like, what are you doing?
So many movies don't end anymore. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of are like, well, of course we're gonna do 19 more of these movies. So nothing.
Samuel L. Jackson shows up and.
It's like, Travis, we need you in the Avengers.
We're all Holy dust shit. Particles now.
Bickle and the Incredible Hulk? Hell yeah, dude.
We've got a taxi driver.
Driving for the Avengers now. We will wipe Loki and the scum off the earth.
Loki. Travis, leave Falcon alone.
Man, that weird point of view shot of Falcon is really disturbing.
But this movie ends so strongly and so intensely that, like, there's an ending for every character and then, like, a weird kind of global ending for the viewer where you, like... And the idea that this guy was 1 minute from killing, from blowing his head off and dying there. Also... Arguably, her life is not going to be that great.
She's going to be completely fucked up.
Yeah, she's going to be even more fucked up witnessing all this murder. You almost kill yourself, and then you don't, and then you become a fucking
hero.
Well,
there's that great line where he calls, when he's trying to be hip, like, you think you're hip? You're not hip. And then he calls Sport a killer, and she's like, Sport didn't kill anybody. And he had just killed somebody, like, the day before.
Yeah.
He is a walking contradiction.
Isn't that interesting?
That's why I relate. Great read acting of like Travis journaling and be like, dear mom and dad. And then the dad sending the letter at the end where it's like, dear Mr. Bickle, we missed you in New York.
Yeah, I know. And the letter he writes to his parents, where he's like, I have a girlfriend named Betsy. She's beautiful. I'm like, you're such a psycho.
Yeah, it was like so odd.
He falls in a coma from his injuries, and we see that the press has painted him as a hero, so he's not been prosecuted for the murders, which is just
wild. Okay.
And then we hear a voiceover from Iris's parents in Pittsburgh who thank Travis for returning their daughter to them. When he recovers, Travis grows out his hair and returns to working in the taxi, where he picks up Betsy as a passenger. They have a pleasant interaction, and Betsy says she's been following his story in the papers. He drops her at home. Didn't like that. I was like, now he knows where you live.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, girl, don't do that.
Doesn't let her pay and drives off with a smile. He suddenly becomes agitated after noticing something in his rearview mirror, but continues driving.
But it's almost like a fantasy when he picks up Betsy. I've almost questioned if that's even real. It's almost like, yeah, I don't even need you anymore. Like, yeah, wouldn't you like... And then... That weird sting of him looking in the mirror of it, because the whole movie is shot like a horror movie, and that is the kind of like jumping out of the grave kind of moment of like
that does make
the bad
sense
guy's
if
still
it's
around.
Yeah, and if he's imagining her being like, you're amazing, and like, here's where I live. Bye.
Yeah, right.
Like,
thank you for letting me out at my house. I'm single now.
Yeah,
oops,
yeah.
There's... didn't wear underwear today.
He commits this ultimate act of violence. And then he's seemingly relieved. In the whole movie, he's invisible. Like, as a cab driver, he's invisible. People are telling him where to go, what to do, you know, all this kind of shit. And then he's like, when he picks her up at the end, she calls him by name. Nobody's ever addressed him in the cab before. She doesn't tell him to take me home. He just does it. And then he ultimately doesn't have to pay. And she gives him, like, respect and seems to like him. And so you think, well, maybe that's it. He got the reaction he wanted. And then him looking into the mirror, like, just starts all over again.
Yeah.
And, like the next time, it's not going to be good.
One thing we didn't talk about is how absolutely fucking incredible the score of this movie is. Bernard Herrmann, it's his final score he ever recorded. And even the sting was like something
this is
Scorsese
cool.
asked him for that. Like, did you hear that story, Sanger, about him being like, just play it backwards?
Yeah. So it was too much. It was like cling. And it was too much. And Scorsese saying, I feel like it's too much. Looking at the mirror, it's too much. And then the last thing he says to Scorsese is like, just run it in reverse. And so it does.
And he walked out of the room.
Yeah.
Like without even listening to it. Yeah. He was like, yeah. And he was right. And he recorded this and then died like having dinner with, Larry Cohen.
Yeah.
Like he had dinner with Larry Cohen, then had a heart attack. And I think John Williams recorded a couple of quick things that like they needed to fill in after he was dead.
Bernard Herrmann, you guys would know, you know the Psycho score, right? The he did that. I mean, he's like famous and did all kinds of shit. But
I saw that for the first time this past year at the Disney Philharmonic where they played
played Live Company Orchestra.
Yeah, it was so
amazing.
That's
awesome.
Yeah. It was really great.
Ben and I saw 2001 A Space Odyssey like that. It was fucking awesome.
The saxophone in the score is this guy, Tom Strong, who's like a fucking genius. The alto sax, which kind of adds that like noir element to it. And like this guy played with like fucking Steely Dan and like all kinds. And he's doing like the, like all.
A session guy, yeah.
Yeah.
He's a legend.
It's incredible how much all of you know.
I know. I'm like,
movie.
I'm sure our entire trivia section has been deleted while you've been talking.
Yeah, truly.
Well, we are movie podcast hosts, so we do the research. I don't know if you guys...
No, Sweetie Pie, that's not how it works.
That's not how it works. So... you get someone else to do the research, and then you spend time on your phone as you watch the movie.
That's not true, Nicole. We don't do that.
You watched the wrong movie.
I watched the wrong movie for this podcast.
That your confusion made sense, though, because I think it came out before this or so. Or there
it
was something
not.
Like that.
No,
oh, never mind.
Not.
Oh, okay, great. So Taxi Driver opened to nearly universal critical acclaim, with Roger Ebert saying it was one of the greatest movies he'd ever seen. It was nominated for 4 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Actor for De Niro, and Best Supporting Actress for Jodie Foster. That's so cool. She was 12. Mm-hmm. And won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival. So that's really amazing. Everyone loved it right away.
Yeah.
And De Niro was right.
He was right. And honestly, I loved it. Here's some trivia. De Niro worked 15 hours a day for a month driving cabs in New York City as preparation for the role of Travis.
No,
he did it for like a week.
The problem with this, the IMDb on this is it's like telephone. These are all
these are all off.
But
they're
how do you know?
IMDb.
Yeah, how do you know the official time?
There's tons of hear Scorsese and De Niro talk about it straight from
about
the horse's
10 days.
Mouth.
10 days.
Fine. Great. This is good. That's why we have you here.
Great. Okay.
So he did it for 10 days. Honestly, that's still a long time.
It's a lot.
That's 150 hours. He has said that despite having won an Oscar for The Godfather Part 2 2 years earlier, he was still a relatively unfamiliar face and was only recognized once. Interesting. Oh.
Scorsese loves that story where it's like he picked up an actor who recognized him because he just won an Academy Award. And so the actor was like, oh my God, you're Robert De Niro. And then he was like, I'm starting out as an actor. He's like, is it really this hard? Even after winning awards, you still need a job as a cab driver? And De Niro's like, yeah.
No. Maybe some of us have podcasts.
De Niro also met his first wife on the set of this film, Diane Abbott. She plays the concession worker at the movie theater. That's so cute.
Yeah,
everybody hates that.
No, I love it. There's a story that Sybil Shepherd tells that supposedly De Niro asked her out, which is we all know to be probably not true.
We can tell you why. I think Nicole will like this fact about Robert De Niro. I don't know.
Well, I know he only likes black women. Yeah,
that is correct, which is why we think he did not ask out Sybil Shepherd.
Yeah. That's so funny.
He's never
would
gone
say
back.
They didn't like Sybil Shepherd. She didn't know a lot of her lines, and I think she's fabulous in the movie, and she's perfectly cast, but she was a model before, and she had some juice because she's really good in Last Picture Show, and she does this movie, and she's just kind of having fun and is a natural, and I think it just, not taking it serious, and so they struggled. And this is from Julia Phillips, who produced the movie. She wrote a great book called You'll Never Have Lunch in This Town Again, where she fucking dishes on everybody. She's the first woman
to
win.
In my bathroom, by the way.
That sounds like a good bathroom when you just pick up and read some gossip.
Yeah, take a shit, learn about Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I'm watching Francesca Scorsese's TikToks on the can every morning. I do Duolingo and then an hour of Marty TikToks.
That's all toilet time?
Yeah, I have 2.5 hours to fill every morning. So, well, not
you
to fill,
to
but
fill
to empty.
It?
You have to fill. He fills it
I
to the
fill
brim
my time
every
while
morning.
I empty myself.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with a little more Taxi Driver.
Do you want to make your mom smile? Start Mother's Day with flowers or surprise her with gifts from the brand she loves. And guess what? It's delivered with the same day with DoorDash. Get 50% off your next order of up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now on DoorDash. And the promo code is NEWCOMERS. Listen, moms are a gift. I know that best. So give her the best this Mother's Day. Select from hundreds of expertly crafted bouquets to the best of tech to self-care essentials delivered right to the door. Get 50% off your next order up to $15 when you spend $15 plus on your next flower, convenience, grocery, or retail order now with the code NEWCOMERS. That's NEWCOMERS. Order using DoorDash today. Terms apply. Get a Mother's Day gift as unique as she is with DoorDash.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
And we're back. So we have a new segment called the New Academy Awards. Get on board. So despite his films having been nominated for over 100 combined Academy Awards, Marty himself has only won one.
Wow.
So we're here to correct the record, presenting the prestigious first annual New Academy Awards. So Anya's going to read off the nominees, and we all will vote on what we think. Okay.
I just remember Goodfellas losing to Ordinary People or some shit. It was always mad.
I can't believe you only lost won one. That feels crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Okay, we're going to do this quickly. So best food scene nominees are the date scene where Travis gets a slice of apple pie with cheese and coffee.
Melted
the scene
in the diner. I thought that was a good choice.
I thought it was a good choice.
The scene in the diner where Iris makes herself a jam and sugar sandwich, or the scene where Travis makes himself a disgusting bowl of crumbled bread, peach brandy, and milk, a meal that Schrader said he would make for himself when he was a heavy drinker.
And that's the scene, that convinced the Bernard Herrmann to do the movie. Yeah. He's like, I really like that.
Yeah.
You're like that was his favorite part of the character. Yeah.
I really liked the jam and sugar sandwich because I felt like she's such a kid. Like it was like
me too.
Sweet. Like she just sat down and like put together that little, and she clearly did it all the time. And
yeah, that juxtaposed to like what she's talking about and how she's mm-hmm. talking about it while making like a little kid's sandwich is such a fucking complex bit of storytelling. Yeah. Where
cheese on pie is also
is she
weird.
Gonna go into a diabetic coma? Like jam is already sugary and you're adding sugar to it?
Wow. When I was a kid, I would eat brown sugar out of the bag and like cake mix out of the bag.
Dude, I was the same.
If you went to a restaurant that had sugar on the table, I would drink sludge. Like I would just keep putting sugar in my water being like, it's actually really good.
One of those cans of frosting, my brother and I would just eat the whole can.
Oh, my parents did love frosting as a kid.
Yeah, my parents have any junk around, I'd be eating fucking pie filling. I'd be like, shit, I guess you can do this apple pie filling.
Maraschino cherries when you're really desperate.
Trying to get some of those.
Disgusting.
Just eating spoonfuls of Cool Whip that you're like.
I would eat chocolate chips. Anything that was
Oh, God. Remember eating the like the non-sweet chocolate
chips? The semi-sweet? They're
disgusting. And you keep eating them.
Tastes like fucking medicine and you're convincing yourself, hey, it's chocolate.
My grandma had tea. I'd straight up do sugar cubes. I'm like, fuck, this sugar cubes are. I get it. I get fucking why the horses Mr. Ed. Are into that.
Yeah. I get my horses into it.
Thanks,
wow, these
grandma.
Horses are on to something.
Do y'all agree on that? Does
cheddar on pie. Cheddar on pie.
I think I gotta go cheddar on pie. Yeah, that's the least disgusting to me.
That sounds so gross, but that's like a thing
why would
do.
You put cheese on pie?
Don't people do that?
It's weird, but people do it. And also, apples and cheese kind of work together, but if you're thinking more brie and goat, work. Yes. Yes, I'm sorry.
It ain't going to land
you. My baked brie, I serve my baked brie with sliced green apple.
I love
okay?
baked brie. Yeah.
I'm not a brie girl.
Wow. Okay, sounds like the votes are split, which is controversial, but we have to keep going. Well, the good thing is it's meaningless.
I think that's why Betsy
Lauren,
might
this means
my
everything.
Vote's for RFK Jr. My vote's for RFK Jr.
We're fixing the Academy Awards.
Okay, we got a couple more to get through. Best line delivery. We have, didn't you ever hear of Women's Lib, Iris in the diner, you talking to me, Travis in the mirror, or hey Travis, this here's Doughboy. We call him that because he'll do anything for a buck. Wizard at the cafeteria.
seems, I mean, I think it's got to be you talking to me.
Yeah, I really like that you talking to me.
Yeah. But I really have to say, it was not how everyone's been doing it forever.
Nope.
It has nothing to do with what everyone's been doing.
All the bad actors trying to do it.
What is your impression? What was your old impression?
Like, this is how I would have, you talking to me? You talking to me? And he repeats it over and over. Yeah. And I'm like, and then it's just, he says it once, I think, and it's like subtle.
Who the fuck are you talking to?
Yeah, I love very the fuck subtle. One.
He's having a back and forth with nobody. Yeah. And it's a conversation.
And I would have thought it was a real scene. I thought it was a real scene.
Yes. Where he was talking to another person who was talking back and maybe a fight ensues. But I'm like, no, this is a man descending into madness pretty quietly.
Yeah. And the level of loneliness. Well, I'm the only one here. You know, this is,
well, I'm the only one here.
Fuck, are you talking to?
The idea of saying you're the only one here to an imagined version of yourself is crazy. Like, there's like layers to how crazy that is. Well, I'm the only one here, so you must be talking to me.
So you must be talking to me. You talking to me?
Because it's also, he's a fucking loser playing make-believe, and everybody's like, God, what a fucking badass.
Yeah.
That's me.
It is wild.
That's me. Yeah. I'm a fucking virgin freak loser. Half the people who think they're Travis Bickle wouldn't even get into the Marines in the first place.
Well, yeah, if you were to properly cast Travis Bickle now, it would be like one of the fat gravy seal guys.
Yeah.
Like, those that's guys, what he would look
those
like.
Those guys who stand outside drag queen readings to protect kids from reading with guns. Thank you for your service, you fat neck fuck.
So we have a new title for our review segment, which we are calling Score Sazy. Or Sazy, however you want to say it. So once again this season, we'll be reading reviews from Letterboxd, and we will each give this film a one-sentence review ourselves and a star rating. So for anyone who doesn't know, Letterboxd is a social platform. People can write reviews of films, and you can follow us on Letterboxd at Newcomers. All of our reviews ever are there. Do you guys have Letterboxd for Action Boys? Is that a thing you do?
No, we try to avoid social media, which is probably bad for our lives and business.
So the Letterboxd review that we have is from Jamie, and I think it's, half a star. I don't want to be anywhere near men who claim this as their favorite film. Wow. Okay, my review and my star rating, I'm going to give it 5 stars. I liked it, even though it was kind of racist and unsettling and pretty bloody and a little disturbing. And there was a 12-year-old who I thought needed a better life. And that must have been bad for Jodie Foster to film. But 5 stars.
Yeah, I want to take that review to task for a hot second. Like, I think if you should not date men that, like, say, I can relate to stuff that Travis Bickle does. Like, don't date, like, a Ryan Stanger. But if a guy says this is his favorite movie, like, if someone says, Independence Day is their favorite movie, and you're like, don't date a guy like that because aliens aren't real. Like, we're talking about a fucking movie. Being a fan of a movie that features bad shit does not mean that that person is necessarily bad. If someone is a grown man who still has Taxi Driver posters on his wall and shit, yeah, like, you know, take heed. But there are worse things to be a fan of than 70s cinema. You could date a guy who's into fucking Funko Pop.
Yeah, there's worse. There's bigger red flags, I think, out there than liking one of the best movies ever.
Get after Jamie.
Take that, Jamie. Yeah, the bigger red flag is if the guy does improv.
That's why I saw so much of Travis and, you know, people I know.
I know, like,
absolutely.
There's something here that is so real.
Just saw one person show.
I wear an army jacket.
The scum of the earth is getting put on Maud Night, and I'm sitting here.
I'm sitting here writing Yelp reviews.
Lauren, what is your review?
My review is classic for a reason. Love Jodie Foster, amazing performance. And Travis Bickle scares me, though I feel De Niro did an amazing job. I want to also add, not as part of my review, that I immediately Googled when Jodie is kissing Harvey Keitel, and it's her 19-year-old sister who is kissing him.
Oh, good.
Because I was like, what is happening here, and why is this happening? And so she wasn't 12 and having to kiss a grown man, just so everyone can know that.
What a relief.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's still, you know, gross.
Well, you don't trust Hollywood now, no less 40 years ago.
Yeah, I assumed it was really happening.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't give my stars. I'm gonna give it 4 stars.
Four stars.
I like this is good. Yeah.
I gave it 5. I loved it.
Oh, is there 5? As an option, I was going 4.
Oh, wait,
out of 4.
We only have 4?
No, it's 5 is right. 5. Five I give it 5. Right. Give it 5.
All right.
4 stars. I don't know where I got that.
I'll just say to that reviewer too, find the Letterboxd reviewer, fine to give it 1.5 and not like the movie, and definitely don't date somebody that says it's their favorite movie.
You know? If you don't like the
probably
movie.
Smart. Yeah. Probably smart.
Yeah, smart. Smart that's move, a smart fire. Move. For me, I give it 5 stars and I would say expertly shot, directed, and acted, this movie will scare the shit out of you. Yeah. It's a good way to go into it.
My review would be it's 5 stars despite it being more and more poignant every year. As we somehow a movie that came out 50 years ago, we are spiraling towards it. I don't know how. But yeah, 5 stars. Also, Sybil, she's fucking strong in the paint and she's fucking
rebounds.
Good to go over the middle.
Good from deep. Good inside. 5 stars, met my wife reviewing it.
Met my wife in the porn theater when we watched.
That's where
this.
I go to watch review Letterboxd movies is the porn theater.
And also,
me
by
and
the
Fred
way,
Willard.
It is playing at the Pasadena Playhouse very soon, so you can walk there.
So you can just walk outside and see Taxi Driver.
We got to get. Oh man, too bad. Fred Willard, R.I.P. would have been a great Travis Bickle.
To check in with him now.
Travis, Fred Willard, Paul Rubens, they're all in heaven jacking off.
You guys. Wow. We need to wrap it up.
So, wow.
We forget what it's like to podcast with other people.
Wow.
So...
Do you guys have anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
We unfortunately, Allie and I have to give our Letterboxd reviews this time as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, go, please.
Yeah, Allie, go ahead.
5 stars, 1 word, Jody.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Mine was 4 stars. Sometimes men think they're being very helpful when actually they're being very harmful. But good movie overall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they get praised for it.
That's good advice.
All right. So do you guys have a podcast you want to plug?
Lauren, I'm like, you guys got a podcast you want to talk about?
I'm honestly afraid I'm cutting out, so I'm just getting right to the point.
We have a podcast called Action Boys. It's a Patreon podcast at actionboys.biz with a Z in both boys and biz. And if you don't want to pay, which I totally understand, we have some free episodes at free.actionboys.biz. So maybe you get a sniff, maybe you get addicted, maybe you come crawling back. Remember me? I listened to the free Lawnmower Man episode. Don't you remember me?
Yes.
A lot
good.
Of people listen to Lawnmower Man episodes around here, pal.
Very What's good, Lawnmower Action Man? Boys listener 69. I learn a lot from listeners just like you.
Lawnmower Man is a bananas movie based on a very short story by Stephen King, and it's
our longest episode.
We did a four-hour episode.
Four hours.
We had to edit it for Patreon because Patreon cannot put up longer than a 4-hour podcast episode.
We had to trim it.
It down to 3 hours and 59 minutes and 15 seconds.
That's very funny.
If you ever see it, just imagine us doing 4 hours on it.
It's not good.
It's not good.
We're not
it's
very bad. We're not. This is not a plug to listen to it. It's out there.
Horrible movie.
Yeah, if you want to fucking end up like Travis.
This is also a plug for friendship. The fact that you could talk for 4 hours about something called Lawnmower Man.
Well, you know, the director does think he's like Scorsese, and he's like putting like Catholic imagery in this fucking movie.
In a movie
that also features a monkey
and
a helmet. Yeah, it also features a monkey with a helmet and a pistol.
Called Cyber
Man. Sounds good.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, we can sell you on it. Believe me.
Sounds like fun.
Well, everyone out there, please write a review for us on Apple Podcasts. You can go give us 5 stars on Spotify right now too. And we'll be back next week. You guys were the best first guests we could possibly hope for this new venture we're on.
Thank you guys for having us.
Thanks for having us.
We are coming back next week with The Last Waltz from 1978. So watch that if you want to know what we're talking about. And we'll see you then.
Newcomer.
Newcomers is a HeadGum Original hosted by us, Nicole Byer and Lauren Lapkus. Our executive producer is Anya Konovskaya. Our producer is Ali Khan. Our theme music, editing, sound mixing, and mastering is done by Ferris Manchi. Listen to new episodes wherever you get your podcasts every Tuesday.
Was a HeadGum Original.